You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Friday to you. We appreciate you being with us. We got a lot to get to on today's podcast. Arkansas basketball taking on Oklahoma tomorrow at Bud Walton Arena, 7:30 tip-off between the Razorbacks and the Sooners. First time they've met as SEC opponents. We'll preview it with Anthony Christensen. Ethan Westerman will also be in the studio a little bit later. We'll talk this women's basketball team that lost again last night, 41-point loss at Vanderbilt. Razorback baseball practice begins today at Baumwalker Stadium. I'll give you some thoughts on what I'm looking for there at practice as the Razorbacks hit the field for the 2025 season. We're also going to talk to Nate Garner, former Razorback football player, longtime NFL offensive lineman, the new head coach at North Greenville University, a Division II school in South Carolina. Looking forward to catching up with Nate and talking about his career and then this new opportunity that he has. But first, Arkansas, Oklahoma tomorrow night at Bud Walton. Razorback's going to be without Boogie Flan for the foreseeable future. We'll see if he's back. John Rothstein earlier this week reported that he was out for the season. Arkansas is not saying that. They're maybe keeping the door open for him to come back. It would be difficult to envision that. You know, from everything I've heard about this, this injury he's had, it's somewhere around a 2-month recovery. So, you know, you think about where we would be in the basketball season in 2 months. You know, maybe is it can he heal a little bit faster? But obviously, it seems unlikely that we're going to see him in the regular season. We'll see about after that. And again, it all depends on how fast he heals. Maybe he doesn't come back. We'll see. But the Razorbacks, they've got some momentum now, Anthony, after beating Georgia the other day. And I got to tell you, this is my first chance to talk about it because I haven't been on the podcast all week. But I felt like watching that Georgia game, that's going to have to be how Arkansas wins this year. They yucked it up. They got to the free throw line. They made their free throws. And frankly, I just thought they out-hustled Georgia for a good number of the game. You look at the stats, and it does not look like the stat box of a winning team. But you know, Jinx. what you can't put in a stat box is hustle and heart. And I thought they had a lot of that against Georgia. And you know, we'll see how it goes tomorrow night against OU. But that, as ugly as it was, that looks like winning basketball for this Arkansas team, especially with Boogie Flan not being in the roster.
Yeah, no, you mentioned it. You look at this Oklahoma team, it's kind of probably going to end up being the same because Oklahoma has a top 10 3-point defense in the country, according to KenPom, and then a bottom 100 2-point defense. So you're probably going to want to push the ball inside, get to the basket like Adu Thiro and Carter Knox were doing really well against Georgia. So, and maybe you're going to want to get some more production out of, you know, Trevin Brazil, Jonas Adu. Though I thought Trevin Brazil did, I said it on podcast yesterday, I thought Trevin Brazil gave them some good minutes, even though he didn't play a ton of, you know, a ton. Got four
fouls.
He
always plays hard.
Yes.
He plays hard. I mean, and again, that's the one thing that you can't put in the box score.
Yeah.
Is how hard a guy plays.
Yeah, absolutely. But you mentioned it. I think that is going to have to be the way that, you know, Arkansas wins games, or at least against these kind of opponents, you know, your Oklahomas and your Georgias, good teams that right now project to be tournament teams. You're going to have to muck it up, muddy the waters a little bit, and, you know, play that physical brand of basketball that I thought they did well in against Georgia. You know, it's the first time I thought that they were more physical than their opponent in SEC play. So, you know, against an Oklahoma team that struggles with its interior defense, I think you're going to have to, you know, see more of the same.
If they're going to call the game like they called the game the other night, why shoot a three-pointer? Why not put it on the floor and just go straight to the basket when you're shooting 3 of 23 from 3? And I mean, I don't know what their season percentage is, but it's not pretty.
No, it's not.
Because they've had a lot of these types of games.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, imagine how the game might have gone different the other night had they not settled for 23 three-pointers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you get into the rhythm of, you know, obviously you don't want to just shun the 3-point line because, you know, if those shots are falling, it's not a close, or at least not as close of a game. So you don't want to just like shun it and just like, you know, just go to the basket, because then you can become predictable and all of that. But, you know, if the shot's open, take it. But you obviously, their success came in driving. I thought, even though Carter Knox finished 1 of 5 from the field, I mean, he had so much success going inside and, you know, drawing fouls, initiating mm-hmm. contact, and then he hit his free throws. I think he was 11 of 13 from the free throw line. So that's what you want. You want to do Thero driving inside like he's been doing pretty much all season. I think you probably want to see more of that from DJ Wagner, especially with him being the primary ball handler for you until, I guess, Boogie Fland is able to come back, if he's able to come back. So that's just kind of where things are. I think you want to see more of that driving, you know, especially from DJ Wagner or Jonell Davis, or even a guy like Billy Richmond, who they're going to see. It seems like they're going to have, you know, carry the ball up the floor at times.
Well, you know, the risk that Arkansas runs if you do get officials who are whistle happy is that they only have 8 players. I mean, there's not a whole lot of players that they can afford, not to be on the floor, whether that be, you know, for whatever reason. And so that's the risk you run. This team's been pretty good, really good, I would say, about not fouling this year. How many guys have fouled out at Arkansas this year?
I don't know off the top of my head. I can remember Thero fouled out once.
He's the only one I can remember.
I know they've gotten some guys in foul trouble. Like Brazil had 4 against Georgia. They've done a good job of avoiding foul trouble.
Thero foul out is the only one I can remember. I'm not saying it hasn't happened somewhere else, but it's the only one I can remember. It's been a team that has been pretty good about not fouling. Mm-hmm. LSU on the road, that's really the only game where I can think of where they just sent a team to the foul line over and over again. Mm-hmm. Again, not saying that there weren't other games. That's the one that, and maybe because that's fresh in my mind, but what have we said about this team? Make your free throws and rebound. If you can do those two very fundamental things, it changes a little bit the complexion of the team, and that's what they did against Georgia. I mean, they mm-hmm. hit 29 of 34 free throws. If they can do that in one game, they ought to be able to take it to another game. Mm-hmm. And they out-rebounded Georgia, I think, by one or two?
It was by 10. Yeah.
Oh, so, I mean, it was quite a bit.
And they had 18 offensive rebounds, okay. too, I think. I don't remember the exact numbers, but they had more field goal attempts than Georgia. By I think
40
it was,
to 30
yeah,
total
it was,
rebounds.
Yeah, it was a not insignificant amount of, you know, field goal, like extra attempts they got from the field just because they got their offensive rebounds, which is obviously, that's a big deal, especially in that game when it's as close as it is. So, yeah, rebounding, getting to the foul line, hitting your free throws, physicality, all things that, you know, not necessarily seen from Arkansas throughout, you know, early SEC play, but they got it done in that game. So, you know, maybe who's to say they can't do it again?
It's what I would call Stan Heath basketball. except for Stan Heath always had big guys. I mean, I always thought that was one of the things, and I know it's way before your time, but that was one of the things that I thought was very underrated about his teams was – Darian Towns was really good, I thought. Stephen Hill was, you know, really good, especially defensively. You know, and then they would rotate players in. Charles Thomas was a good role player off of the bench. And this team didn't have the bigs, certainly not like that team did. But similar concept. Offense isn't going to be pretty. You got to out-hustle them.
Yeah.
And that's how they're going to have to win their games. And there are going to be some games where they're going to play teams that are so talented – it doesn't matter how much hustle you have. They're not going to win those games.
Probably not.
But in these games like OU, I mean, this is one of those – people were talking Georgia's a must-win game. This feels like a must-win game for
Absolutely.
Arkansas because for as good as OU's record is, they haven't been great in the SEC.
Just won their first game against South Carolina.
Their non-conference schedule, was it great?
It wasn't great, but I mean, they got some good wins in there. I mean, they beat Michigan in a kind of a shootout-ish kind of game, in a very similar way that Arkansas.
That's the one
did.
Where they won on the 4-point play.
Yes, yeah. Jeremiah Fears, he's awesome. They beat Arizona on a neutral, beat Louisville on a neutral, and Louisville is on fire right now. Mm. Even after having lost, you know, Cason Pryor and some other guys, Louisville looks spectacular. Pat Kelsey might be National Coach of the Year with how he's done there. But, you know, it's an Oklahoma team that, you know, got some good wins in non-conference. You know, they didn't play Auburn's non-conference schedule by any means. But, you know, they took care of business. I mean, you don't finish 13-0 in non-conference play by a fluke. But then they walked into conference play, and obviously I think a lot of people expected them to struggle. you know, got killed by Alabama, you know, but then they've played close games as well. I mean, lost by 2 against Texas A&M, you know, 10 points against Georgia after having a lead in that game. Kind of threw the game, or not necessarily, I think they came back and made it a game against Texas, if I remember correctly. I remember watching parts of that game. And then they get their due reward with a 20-point win against South Carolina. So, you know, it's a team that, you know, they have talent. They've shown that. They've won good games. So, yeah, it's an interesting game for sure.
And they've been off for a week.
And they have been off for a week.
They haven't played since that South Carolina. And that can go one of two ways. I'm always interested to see how a team bounces back from having extra time off. Are they rusty or are they fresh?
Yeah.
And you never really know, you know, how that's going to go until you actually get out there on the floor. I was interested with Calipari the other day. He said that they're basically taking a lot of load off of these players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to say they're not practicing, because they are, but the load in practice is not as heavy, so that they are fresh and ready to go once game time comes around.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just like you do mention it, obviously you want to keep your guys fresh, but there's the balance between freshness and rustiness, and it will be interesting to see just how, I guess, Oklahoma toes that line, having been off for a week. It'll be interesting to see how Arkansas does it in that Kentucky game as well, because Arkansas will have a week off before that. This is Arkansas's last game before, you know, heading to Kentucky. So that'll be an interesting thing to see from there. You know, how much does it benefit?
That'll be interesting to watch on so many levels that we don't have enough time today to talk about.
That's true. You know, it'll be a lot of fun to go there and, you know, do all of that. I'm going to spend some time with my cousins who live there. It'll be fun. But Oklahoma is, it'll be interesting to see how they handle, you know, that kind of balance.
This Jeremiah Fears, he looks like a freshman All-America type. I mean, he's averaging,
he's so
17 points a game. He's not Cooper Flagg, but who is? But, you know, I mean, when you start talking about outside of Flagg, the best freshman in college basketball, it's not going to take you too long to get down the line, and he would be in that discussion.
Yeah, no, he's exceptional. I mean, his 3-point percentage isn't the best, so, you know, you want to see him, you know, improve in that area, though obviously we know he can hit 3-pointers because look at what he did against Michigan. You know, he's excellent just kind of driving. He's a great free throw shooter. He earns a lot of fouls. He gets fouled a lot. So you see that. He's also unselfish. He's got a high assist rate as well. You know, he's just a good player. You know, he's definitely in that, you know, top 10, top 15 freshman range. You know, he's not Cooper Flagg, like you said, but no freshman at this point is. You know, Cooper Flagg is the front runner right now for National Player of the Year, not just Freshman of the Year, alongside Jahni Broome there at Auburn. But Jeremiah Fears, that guy rocks, man. He's so fun to watch.
Arkansas, Oklahoma, 7:30, ESPN2. This is going to go head-to-head, by the way, with the game of the week, Tennessee at Auburn, which tips off at the exact same time on ESPN. Brian Custer and Richard Hendricks will be on the call for ESPN2 tomorrow night. What do you think is the key for Arkansas to win this?
I think it's the, you know, it maybe feels like a little bit of a cop-out answer just because, you know, we've said it so much, but it worked against Georgia. Be physical. Get to the free throw line. Get your rebounds. You know, fight through contact. You know, that's just kind of, that's how they won that game against Georgia. I thought, you know, maybe I'm wrong. You know, I'm sure people feel free to let me know if they feel differently. But, you know, it's an Oklahoma team that struggles with its interior defense. You know, it allows teams to score inside to get to the free throw line. So I think that's kind of where Arkansas will need to win this game. You know, kind of maybe even muddy the waters up a little bit. And, you know, especially with how good Oklahoma's 3-point defense has been, I think, you know, that's kind of where you need to win that game.
I'm really interested to see what the fan reaction is going to be, what the attendance is going to be tomorrow night, because it wasn't great for the Georgia game. A lot of people I know were trying to give tickets away, and they couldn't give them away. It was cold. It was a late game in the middle of the week. You know, that's going to keep attendance down in the first place. And then you got a team who's 0-5 that, you know, that plays a big factor too. Does the Georgia win, does it make people believe in this Arkansas basketball team again and make them come out and support them in a game that, and like we said, should be competitive?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, that even though it was kind of a smaller crowd against against Georgia. It ended up being a lively crowd. It was fun. I guess that's just kind of the nature of how that game ended up turning out. But it'll be interesting for sure to see, just because, I mean, there is kind of like a pseudo rivalry, I think, kind of between Oklahoma and Arkansas. I know Eric Musselman got tossed one or two times in these games in the neutral sites. So, not easy drive, I guess, but I've never been to Norman, but
it's a very easy drive.
Okay, then it's an easy drive. So maybe a lot of drive Oklahoma to Tulsa, people you hit come the, by and
drive to Tulsa, and then you hit south toward Oklahoma City.
Easy drive for Oklahoma people to Oklahoma fans to come in.
Well, here's
so
the deal:
maybe
OU
be a good road crowd too.
This area of Arkansas has a lot of OU people. I say this all the time. I grew up in Waldron, which is 15, 20 miles from the Oklahoma border. And our hometown radio station was a Sooner Sports Network affiliate. Fort Smith, you could maybe go into Central Mall and find more OU gear than you can find Razorback gear. Or at least it was that way when I was a kid. Baker Mayfield, when he won the Burlsworth Trophy both years that he won it, I mean, there was a very big number of OU people who were either in this area or maybe over in eastern Oklahoma. And they came over here. When Bob Stoops came to the Northwest Arkansas Touchdown Club, it was the same thing. All right, a lot of OU fans in this area. So I suspect there will be some at the game Saturday, but this is more about Arkansas. The late tip-off on Saturday, maybe that plays a factor. What's the weather going to be? I don't know. It's probably going to be cold. That's how it is this time of year. But, I just hope it's officiated better. And I know that like the officiating really helped Arkansas stay in that game the other night. But you know what I kept thinking? That was an 8 o'clock tip-off, and it ended at 10:40.
I didn't leave Bud Walton until
what
well after midnight.
What if those officials get the Vanderbilt game? That's a 9 o'clock tip-off on a midweek night here in a few weeks.
I mean, if they do get that game and it's officiated the same way, I will not be leaving.
I mean, this
Memorial
easily could have
Coliseum until
and this easily could have gone to overtime.
Late. It could have.
I mean, imagine if these guys would have had another 5 minutes to show.
Hey,
what
let's just be thankful it didn't.
Arkansas OU.
Yeah.
Arkansas OU tomorrow night. Anthony, thanks for being here. We want to tell you and get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple or Spotify. Search Whole Hog Sports. We've got a video version on YouTube, our Whole Hog Sports YouTube page, and we post the podcast each weekday to our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle there is Whole Hog Sports. When we come back, Nate Garner, former Razorback, former NFL offensive lineman, new head coach at North Greenville University, will join us to talk about this new experience for him. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being here. We're joined now by Nate Garner. Nate played football at Arkansas from 2003 to 2007. He was an All-SEC offensive lineman his final year with the Razorbacks, and he was just hired recently as the head coach of a Division II team in South Carolina, North Greenville University. Nate, first off, congratulations on the new job. Tell me what maybe you've learned over your first couple of weeks as a head coach.
I've only been here 9 days today, so... Okay. Learned quite a bit, man. I've learned there's a lot more to this than just coaching football. And obviously I knew a little bit about that beforehand, but I'm going through all the hurdles that it takes getting onboarded at a university and just learned a ton in this little bit of time.
So tell us about the school that you're taking over and just, I don't know if the challenge is the word, but like, you know, what are you expecting maybe from this first team?
I'm expecting great things, honestly. It's going to be our first year in the Conference of Carolinas. The great competitive team in the past, and I think we got a bright future. We got a chance to go out and kind of surprise the world with what we're going to do.
I was a little surprised as I was looking through your bio. I didn't realize, Nate, that you had come back to Arkansas about 7 years ago, I guess, and worked a little bit with the Razorbacks.
Yeah, I did. I did under Coach Morris. Okay. I spent a couple weeks on not really on staff with them, but kind of just being around, helping them out with some of the run game stuff, helping with their O-line. And it was a great experience, great thing to put on the resume, and really enjoyed that time with them.
So kind of take people through who don't know your story. You played for the Dolphins for a number of years, and then kind of, you know, take it from there and how your coaching journey has gone.
Well, yeah, I played for the Dolphins for 7 years. I sustained a pretty serious head injury my last year in the league in 2014. So it took me about 3 years to recover from that. And during that three-year time, I was dealing with quite a bit of adversity, a lot of probably like 20-plus migraines a month. So it was a pretty tough time in my life. Mm-hmm. And as I was coming out of that, a friend of mine had had me over for dinner one night, and one of their buddies was in town. He was just taking over a high school football team down in South Florida. And he goes, "Hey, man, you know what? I just took this team over. My O-line coach needs a little bit of help from you. You think you can come out and just teach him how to coach O-line?" So I went out there. I probably only spent 6 weeks with them, working with their O-line, trying to help develop those guys. I helped them grow the team from 30 players to 130 during training camp. Mm-hmm. The 4,000-person high school, only 30 kids were engaged. So got the team growing a little bit, helped develop the O-line coach. I had a newborn, so I wasn't able to spend a lot of time with them, but I got the bug for coaching, man. And I knew that was kind of what I wanted to do. So in 2018, I was trying to figure out where I was going to be. So I ended up spending some time with the New Orleans Saints. Jeff Ireland, one of their assistant GMs down there, he invited me to come out. I worked with their O-line. I worked in the front office with them for a little bit during training camp. Just again, develop myself as a coach, try to learn as much as I could about the entirety of the process. And then once I left them, that was when I went up to Arkansas. I spent a couple weeks up there with Coach Morris. And then that was all I kind of really did in 2018. I did those things, couldn't find a job. Because I don't know if you know this or not, but there's a bit of a stigma to NFL players. Hmm. Either coaches that haven't played are going to be scared of us because we have instant credibility with the kids and things like that. Or there's a stigma that former NFL guys are lazy. So that's kind of been going across the whole coaching world over the last 10 years or so. And so it was really hard for me to get my foot in the door. A lot of my former coaches were out of the game, weren't coaching anymore. So I didn't have that in anymore. So I was just trying to find something. So come to 2019, I still didn't have a job. I was looking around, trying to figure out what I was going to do. Got my application out to a bunch of people, called a bunch of people. Nothing was working. So come week three of that season, a buddy of mine calls me, and he's like, "Hey, I just saw a junior college down near you, lost their O-line coach. The head coach played in the league. He needs someone to come help him out. Do you think you want me to send your number to him?" I said, sure, why not? So I go out there, ended up joining on with them from week three on for that season. Helped improve the running game substantially, over 100 yards per game after I got there. Then COVID hit. So we got furloughed, no job, trying to figure out what I was going to do in the coaching world. And Roger Harriott at St. Thomas Aquinas reached out to me, pretty historic football program in South Florida. Mm-hmm. He said, "Hey, man, why don't you come be my O-line coach?" So I coached O-line for him in 20 and 21. And also, he gave me the opportunity during 21 to go spend some time at La Tech with one of my former coaches. So I spent about a week during training camp down there with them as well. Again, just developing myself as a coach, learning as much as I could. So got two state championships in Florida in 20 and 21. And then saw that the job opening at Limestone was there, shot my resume off, and got hired on there. We had a great coaching staff that first year. We had 6 former NFL players on staff. Went 8-3 in the regular season, made the playoffs for the first time in school history. Made a lot of history there. Second year, same success, 8-3, made the playoffs again. And then last year, the same thing, 8-3, very consistent, same record. And I just developed myself over those 3 years and learned as much as I could about what it took to be a head coach. And this past season, Coach Cotry, who was actually at the Jets when I was there, became our head coach after Coach Furry went to South Carolina. So he actually let me see a lot more behind the scenes and learn quite a bit and kind of learned with him because he was a first-year head coach. So he's someone I'm leaning on a little bit right now, him and Coach Furry, just about what it takes to get through this initial phase of just being onboarded at a university. Where I'm at now, and I'm pumped up to be here.
You coached at St. Thomas Aquinas. Did you coach Marcus Dumervil?
I did not. He was the year before me.
Okay. Okay. Of course, you know, he just signed with the Razorbacks. I didn't know if there was any kind of overlap there between you guys. You know, Nate, I always loved your story because it was a different time in college football. You know that. Yeah. But, you know, you waited your time at Arkansas. You had Tony Ugo ahead of you. I think Zach Tubbs was ahead of you maybe for a year or two. And you know, it was your redshirt senior year before you really got into, you know, you broke into the starting lineup, and then you took hold of your opportunity. Just kind of talk about your college career and maybe how that experience, you know, helped prepare you for what you're doing now.
Yeah, I talk about that a lot with my players. We got official visits up here right now, so I kind of told them my whole college story last night with all the parents and all the players. It was a big deal in my life. I don't know if you know this, but in high school, I only played one play my senior year.
Is that right? I didn't know
that. Yeah, I broke my foot first play of the season. I've dealt with a lot of adversity when it comes to injuries in my life. So I missed that whole season. I get up to Arkansas. I ended up blowing my shoulder out my freshman training camp. So I had shoulder surgery that year, recovered from it. But like you said, I had some pretty good players in front of me. Kept grinding, just kept my nose down and grinding every single year. And finally got the opportunity in that fifth year, and I seized it, man. It was a great experience to finally just be able to show that I had the ability to do what a lot of people said I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I had some people tell me I wouldn't be able to play in college. I had people tell me, guys like you are a dime a dozen. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to prove all y'all wrong. And I finally got the opportunity to do that. And I think I had one of the longest tenures of the guys I played with. It's Jason Peters, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I always thought Mike Markison was an underrated offensive line coach. The number of guys that came out of Arkansas during those years, you know, whether it be yourself, you mentioned Jason, who really didn't even play offensive line. You know, he was a tight end more here at Arkansas. Just there were so many great offensive linemen who came through there in those years.
I think every guy that was on the O-line my senior year had a chance at the league, mm-hmm. at least a rookie minicamp at minimum. So we had a great offensive line. He did a great job developing us and growing us. We obviously had some great running backs too at that time too, so that helped keep the eyes on us.
You keep much eye on the Razorbacks these days?
When I can. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched anything to do with football, even NFL stuff, in the last 3 weeks since I was going through this process. I've only been official for 9 days, but I've been developing a plan over the last 3-4 weeks, just trying to get everything ready to rock and roll once I got on.
What do you want the culture of your team to be there in North Greenville?
Man, we're going to be a hard-nosed football team. They're going to be tough, competitive. We're going to be disciplined. That's one thing that I've come into is they're an extremely disciplined team already, which is awesome. I just got to keep developing that toughness side of them, that aspect of them. And I know they're going to buy into that. They're all already bought into me as a coach. And when I get my staff finally implemented here, they're going to be very impressed. And we're going to do the best we can to develop them to their fullest potential.
What coaches, you know, I noticed Houston Nutt had a statement in your hiring press release. Do you keep in touch with him? Are there other coaches that you played for here that you keep up with that maybe have helped mentor you along the way?
Oh, most definitely. Coach Nutt's been there for me. He's been a mentor for me. I talk to him at least 3-4 times a year at a minimum, just trying to pick his brain about how this process works. Because, like I said, I've been trying to get into it, learn as much as I could the last 5-6 years, you know what I mean? And then Coach David Lee, he was the OC there my senior year. He actually ended up being the quarterback coach of the Dolphins when I ended up down there. Mm-hmm. He's been truly a mentor to me. Like, he's sat down, we've talked, because I'm an O-line guy. He's taught me pass concepts, helped me develop an offense. Like, he is absolutely an amazing mentor to me. He helps me understand the process, helped me understand really the business behind football too. So he's been there for me. I keep up with Coach Markison, talk to him every once in a while. Coach Horton, he's up at Air Force now. He sends me a letter every year, and I stay in touch with him a few times a year as well.
You know, you mentioned that there's a stigma against NFL players. Not a lot of offensive line coaches get a chance as a head coach either. I mean, it doesn't matter really what the level is. So I'd have to think that you feel pretty blessed to have that opportunity too.
I'm very blessed, man. I know a lot of people think you got to have a coordinator title or you got to have previous head coaching experience. There's a lot of offensive line guys that become coaches, but a lot of times they go through that process of becoming a coordinator and then moving up that those ranks. So I'm very blessed and very fortunate to be here straight out of being an O-line coach.
How easy was it to block for Darren McFadden?
I mean, he made it easy, fast enough to get around the edge. You just had to hold up your guy for a couple seconds, man.
You got a favorite moment during your playing career here?
Yeah, the 2007 against LSU, the last two-point conversion to seal it. Felix Jones bounced off my butt into the end zone of the two-point conversion. Like that was awesome. Running over and grabbing the trophy off the sideline. You can't beat that, man. That golden boot, it was awesome.
Well, Nate, we wish you the best of luck, and we appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
Of course. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll see you. Nate Garner, the new football coach at North Greenville University, Division II in Tigerville, South Carolina. Thank you, Nate.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan Westerman is with me in studio now. It's like 12 degrees this morning, so... Hey, baseball season begins today. Preseason baseball at Baumwalker Stadium. There's going to be a scrimmage this afternoon. As of the time that we are recording this, let me double check here. Yep, still don't have the official time, but we know that they're going to be practicing at Baumwalker Stadium this afternoon. The expectation is that there will be a short scrimmage. Don't know how long, maybe three, maybe four innings. But we're going to see Razorback baseball today. Ethan, I know that that's something that people have been looking forward to probably since SEC basketball play started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're all ready for – I mean, I said this the other day on the show to Christina. Like, it's just the, it's the cycle that we always go through every time this year, I feel like. Even whenever basketball's having a good season, people are still ready for baseball, softball. But especially on the years where the basketball team is not having a great start to SEC, I think you feel it more, especially on a year that – you get off to your worst start since the Southwest Conference days, then it only magnifies. So I think we're all ready. You know, it's a good change of pace, and I think that those teams in the spring are just so good. Like, Arkansas is a really good spring sports school.
Yeah, you got Razorback baseball, softball, track. Gymnastics has been good here for the last couple of years. They've got a big meet at Bud Walton today against LSU, who's the reigning national champion. From what I understand, this may be a sold-out gymnastics meet. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, you're looking at a record crowd for Arkansas because they're having all their meets at Bud Walton now. You know, maybe a record that never gets broken. Who knows?
Yeah, it's kind of been the buzz that there's going to be a lot of people there. I'll be curious to see. I'm going to go by tonight and watch it. So really curious to see what the turnout is.
Okay, so on baseball, I've spent a lot of time over at baseball this week doing interviews. I've spent time getting our Hogs Illustrated baseball magazine preview, my portion for that finished, which it was a lot, and I'm excited about everybody seeing that. Some things that I think you should be watching for, or you know, if you're not there, things I'll be watching for you. This afternoon at Baumwalker Stadium. You know, the number one is who pitches. Because to me, who pitches on this first day of the preseason is usually, it can be telling as to who they are considering to be their number one starter at the beginning of the year. My expectation is that Gabe Gackel is probably going to be their number one starter, but we'll see. But what happens is that, you know, they get them into the, you know, they get them out there for this first one. They might throw an inning, might throw two, just knock the rust off more than anything else. And then you work their pitch count up and you get them on a Friday to Friday routine in preparation for that season opener. against Washington State on Valentine's Day. So certainly it's not just who pitches, it's also where they pitch. Mm-hmm. I think can be, you know, very telling. You know, who you bringing in the middle innings, even if it is only for an inning. Who are you bringing in a closer type role, even if it's only, you know, even if the game's like or the scrimmage is 8-0, you know, it can be telling about who pitches and when they pitch. And so that'll be something I'm watching today. Also, the rehabbing pitchers is interesting to me. Colin Fisher, Hunter Dietz, Aidan Jimenez, they're all coming off of off-season injuries. Fisher and Jimenez had surgeries. Dietz did not. Dietz did have a surgery in the fall of 23. Then he had an injury last year after a couple of outings that was related to that surgery, but did not require another surgery. Fisher had the internal brace. Jimenez had Tommy John surgery when he was at Oregon State last year. Based on talking to the coaches, Ethan, and the trainers, it seems like all three of these pitchers, they're kind of on a similar track right now. Like they're kind of almost, you know, not completely equal, but they're very close together in their rehab. And so I'm interested to see if those three are able to pitch. Jimenez probably would surprise me if he pitches this weekend. But the other two, you know, like are they able to get out there? If they're out there, you know, like how much are they able to pitch? These are just, you know, again, little things that I'm watching for this weekend.
It's always interesting to me to see, you know, those trends that you pick up in the preseason, if they do pan out and end up being, you know, something that you see play out large scale in the season. Sometimes, you know, the scrimmages, you know, you do have to just take it with a grain of salt. But I do think there's a lot of things that you can pick up on, especially whenever it's trends year over year. Like you said, like the first Friday, that's usually kind of maybe the guy that's going to start being the first pitcher of the weekend. I'll be curious to hear more about it from you. I know you're going to have plenty of stuff from there.
I'll be there. This is the time of year that can be it can be interesting covering baseball, because you're out there and, you know, quite frankly, sometimes to get a good seat, you don't get to sit in the sun. Like to get the seat where you really see something, you got to shiver. And, you know, you kind of just get into a ball, and you got about three or four layers on. You got your gloves, and you're writing your notes. And or one time I went out and shook, and, you know, I watched a long scrimmage about this time of year. And then I went out to talk to Matt Hobbs. He's like, "You all right, man?" I mean, I was shaking like a chihuahua. I mean, I couldn't stop. I was like, "No." I was like, I'm that cold.
Yeah.
And it can be tough to cover the baseball, these scrimmages. But I do think it's rewarding. You learn a lot about the team.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about the team, and you know, some of the things that you see on that opening weekend maybe don't surprise you when you go out and you watch them for the 3 weeks before the season starts.
I'm also always interested whenever it rolls around to preseason stuff to see the differences from the fall, things that have changed since the fall. Because I think that's what's so, you know, like there's that month and a half or so of fall ball where teams are scrimmaging, playing exhibitions, and then there's just a little couple months buffer between when they start their preseason stuff again. It's interesting to me always to see the adjustments that were made based off fall. I know baseball is a totally different animal than like softball, even, because there's your roster changes from the fall to the spring. But there are also, I think, just things that they learn about their players and adapt before preseason rolls around.
It does change, but, you know, I mean, you know, what happens is that you've got a pretty good idea in the fall of who's going to stick around for you in the spring. And so the players who leave at semester, it's very rarely, if ever, a surprise that they're leaving you at the semester. What's interesting always to watch for me is sometimes players who had a good fall, they don't pick back up in the preseason, and that's always, you know, that's always something to watch. Talking about rehabbing, Kendall Diggs is another a player that I'm interested to watch this week and this weekend. He's back. He's swinging at everything. He's fully cleared to play. But talking to him and talking to his coaches, the batting practices have been a little bit rusty right now. And, you know, for him to play, I feel like he needs to get back to a level that's near what he was as a hitter before he got hurt. And so, again, that's another thing that's to watch. He's got a labrum injury. It was to his left shoulder. It's kind of interesting for him because this is his power shoulder as a hitter, but he throws right-handed. We've seen some players have labrum surgeries at Arkansas in the past. Seen it with Jalen Battles a couple of years ago. Saw it with Peyton Stovall last year, to where the injury was to a shoulder that was not their dominant shoulder. Mm-hmm. And so, or I guess with Stovall, his was a little bit, his was to his throwing shoulder, but was not his dominant, the bat swinging shoulder. So I don't know where I'm going there, but the point being that I guess no two labrum surgeries are the same. Obviously, everybody heals differently. I'm interested to see what happens with Kendall Diggs. First base battle, that's something that I think probably is going to get written about a lot, not just in the preseason, but even once the season begins, because I don't expect there to be a starting first baseman named out of the fall. I think that some of these players are going to get a chance to show what they can do in games. There's five players who are going to work out at first base this preseason. Michael Anderson's a transfer from Rhode Island. Rocco Pepe is a transfer from Fresno State. Cam Kozel, transfer from Vanderbilt. Cahill Aloy, a transfer from BYU. And then you've got Reese Robinette, who's in his third season with Arkansas. Based on what I'm told, Robinette is probably their best defender at first. But this is one of those positions where you've got to be able to hit. Mm-hmm. And you've got to, ideally, you've got to hit with some power. Robinette's got the power, but he has never really hit consistently. And so, I think his bat is going to play a huge role in how much playing time he gets there. You look at the other ones. I mean, Pepe, he's got the bat. They love his bat. They think he's going to get in the lineup somewhere because of the bat. Michael Anderson, kind of a similar thing. He's got the potential to have a really good bat. Aloy, he's got the power. I don't know that he's got the consistency. And Kozel's an interesting one, too. First is a very interesting, intriguing position battle. Mm-hmm. Because, again, you want somebody who can hit, but it's one of those positions, kind of like the center in football, that you don't realize, wow, he touches the ball pretty much every single play. Mm-hmm. And so you got to be able to have some fielding there, too.
Yeah, that's always striking that balance, because I think you take a better hitter with a slightly better that's slightly worse at defense at first base, but you can't have somebody who's just such a liability at first base defensively, just because they have a good bat. You do have to strike that balance. I keep on comparing things to softball because that's what I cover most of the time, and it's like they've had a run, Courtney's team, with having really good defenders and hitters at first base between Bree Ellis and Danielle Gibson, who's been in their program. And I just think that's you don't realize until you have, I guess, a liability there defensively, yeah, how important it is to have somebody who can defend.
Arkansas's got to get some hitters in the lineup. I mean, they had – you think about these positions, first base, third base, corner outfield, DH. You expect some power, mm-hmm, out of those, and they didn't have that last year, I mean, for the most part. You have players that would show power for, a spurt here and there, but consistently they didn't have power and really didn't have a whole lot of, offensive production at a lot of those spots. And so it feels like they have better hitters in those positions now. They got to show it in a game, but it does feel like they have improved their offense on the whole. You just kind of look at it around the rest of the diamond. These players, I think, came out of the fall as you've got an idea that either they are the starter or they're certainly the front runner. Vahiva Aloy at shortstop, we know he's going to start. Ryder Helfrich at catcher, we know he's going to start. I suppose you're probably going to see Charles Davelin in center field, probably going to see Logan Maxwell in left. Brent Iredell, he'll be the third baseman. And I think Nolan Sousa is going to be the second baseman. But Kozel's one that I think he could still potentially push Sousa for playing time in second.
Yeah. I am interested. I think I heard or read or something, maybe it was fall ball, maybe it was just while they were constructing their roster. This is a team that they're wanting to get more active offensively on the base.
Aggressive
on, yeah, the base pads, right?
Yes.
And I guess who are some of the guys on the team that...
Davelin.
Okay, there you go.
There's your... I mean, Davelin to me, and I'm not saying he's the only one. I think there's they've worked a lot on running. But Davelin, he's got the look of a true leadoff hitter. And I would say Maxwell does too. Maxwell, the transfer from TCU. But, you know, Dabbling's like 5'8", 5'9". You know, he's a double machine, or at least he was at Florida Gulf Coast, and he had quite a few during the fall, too. He's going to – if once he gets on base, I think there's going to be some aggressiveness there. I could see it with Nolan Souza. I mean, Souza, a really good athlete. Maxwell, like I said, Brent Iredell's one who everybody notices his bat. And I mean, he's got some power in the bat, but he's got some speed on the bases too. Mm-hmm. And so they've got, you know, they've got some players. You're going to have some that get on base too that are going to be in this lineup who, you know, they're going to look like your lumberjacks a little bit. But I think everybody has worked. They've worked on dirt ball reads. They've worked on, you know, stealing off of pitchers. They've worked on, you know, stealing off of catchers. And so I think that, you know, the way that it's been described to me is when you work on it, you're going to be able to do it well. And that's certainly a point of emphasis, I think, for this team this year is to be more aggressive, not wait for the two-run home run, put some pressure on the defense, put some pressure on the pitcher, and try to manufacture some things, or at least put yourself in position to score some runs, you know. Be at second or third when there's a wild pitch, as opposed to being at first. And so, you know, I think that's what you're going to see from this team. Women's basketball. You want to talk about this real quick? They lost by 41 to Vanderbilt.
There's only last night. So many ways you can talk about 30 plus point losses.
So this is five blowouts now for them this year, and I mean, big blowouts. All
in
of
SEC
them,
play.
In SEC play. They also lost to UCLA.
You could probably add Oral Roberts to the mix, too. They got beat by over 20 in that
one. Not a good season. You wrote it last night. Worst start they've ever had to a season that had more than 20 games. Where do they go? I mean, because this isn't like the men's basketball team where, yes, there were some blowouts, but there are also some games where, you know, you can point to if you did this, this, and this different, then you win the game. I'm not seeing that with the women's basketball team. And it's not like the schedule gets a whole lot easier. I mean, they play Kentucky this weekend. Kentucky's the 11th ranked team in the country. I mean, this is not pretty what's going on with women's basketball.
Yeah. And there are a couple games you can point to like that for the women, but unfortunately they're against like Toledo and Troy and Bowling Green. Like those are losses that are on their schedule. Against their losses against power programs are just, they're just blowouts. There's no other way to put it. It's just by the fourth quarter, it's well out of hand. And it's, where do you go? It's hard to know, especially considering that they really don't have like, you know, upperclassmen on the team. They have Izzy Higginbottom, but like, and Carly Keats is a junior, but like, you know, you think about the offseason and whenever you are not able to produce like they are, like, I think everybody's brain instantly goes to transfer portal. Just how can you get a lot in the transfer portal? Whenever you have all these underclassmen, unless you're just telling them, like, hit the road, I guess, like, there's not even a ton of spots to.
There's the coaching element to this too, and I think Mike Nabors is in pretty hot water. The tenure has fallen off here in the last couple of three seasons after what I thought was a really solid start to it. We'll see what happens there, but it's hard for me to believe unless there's something that I don't know or realize. It's hard for me to believe that he gets another chance to come back to Arkansas based on what's happening this year.
Yeah, and it's, you know, in the off chance that he is still the coach here next year, what does he do with his roster? Like, how do you beef it up in the transfer portal? If he's not here, what does an incoming coach do with this roster? Like, it's just whoever – the transfer portal is going to have to be, like, a fix for whoever is in charge, and it's like, how do you even get the roster to a point where you – like, well, I mean,
and who wants to come play whenever you're going to have a year with a coach on the hot seat?
Yeah, it's just, it's
you know what it reminds me of? You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of watching the 2019 football season. And you know how they got to a point where they weren't even competitive anymore? You know, Western Kentucky came in here and spanked them, and Mississippi State and Auburn. And, I mean, you remember how it went. I remember whenever Chad Morris got let go in season, Juracek, who was the AD, he said, because he had said earlier in the year that he had confidence in Morris, and he was asked, you know, what made you lose that confidence and make
competitiveness?
And it was a lack of competitiveness. Yep. And I think that's what we're seeing with the women's basketball team right now.
It's extremely, you know, it even makes the 2019 football season even look worse whenever I add in here that this team did beat Auburn and Boston College. They've beaten a couple names like that football team never did, but it is very much a similar trend as far as it's just like there's not any hope right now, if that makes sense. They have a couple opportunities on the schedule to maybe win a couple more games in SEC, but that's a big maybe, it's a big if, and it would take them playing a whole lot better than they've played the last two times they've been on the court, where they just were not they're not even playing hard all the time, it looks like. So it's I think that's a good parallel. I'm very curious to see what does happen. It is a bleak situation, but it's there's however many more games left in the SEC schedule, 10. They're going to have to play those 10 and try and play a lot better.
Yeah, there's got to be more competitive.
Yeah.
And like I said, doesn't get any easier. They go to Kentucky Sunday morning, 11 o'clock tip-off Central Time on SEC Network, and this is going to be at Rupp Arena. They usually will play at the old Memorial Gym or Coliseum. I can't remember which one it's called in Lexington. But the old men's basketball arena, the women have played there forever. But it's undergoing some renovations right now, so they're going to play in Rupp, which is unusual for a women's basketball game.
They're in Memorial now.
All right, well, it says Rupp here on the schedule.
I think that they probably that's what happened last year. I bet that it was a copy and paste of the schedule because the Kentucky women are back in Memorial, unless this game is randomly in Rupp, which I think this is in a I'm pretty sure this is in Memorial Coliseum for Kentucky.
Scratch that. Either way, they got to go on the road to play Kentucky. This is a tough one.
There we go.
For the Razorbacks.
It is in the historic Memorial Coliseum.
We're back. All right. Arkansas, Kentucky on Sunday. We hope you will come to our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the weekend. I'll be out at baseball. Christina Long will be at the Bud Walton Arena covering the gymnastics meet. We'll all be there at Bud Walton tomorrow. For Arkansas U, Ethan will have women's basketball coverage from across the board, Razorback Sports. Who knows what else is going to happen this weekend. So we hope that we will see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. And we'll see you again on Monday here on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.